Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The theme has been established. This weather will not get us down. So we're playing feel-good music today. Just music you hear. Maybe you haven't heard it in a while, and this comes on and feels like a party. Maybe it feels like you're at a discotheque. People use that word anymore. I don't know. So feel-good music on another cold Saturday in Kansas. No, Jed Marshall said no. I think that goes back to my Spanish class in high school. What's the word for a nightclub in Spanish? We had to say like discotheque or something like that, but anyway, I threw it out there. It's cold, but we're gonna heat you up, hopefully. My name is Brad Porter. This is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Rudy Salazar is running the board. Jed Marshall is jumping in and out on the show. You can follow me on Twitter, at Brad K. Porter. Right now, joining us on the line is Mr. Cody Tapp. And Cody, I was joking earlier in the show that when I saw the forecast for this week, for Wednesday and Thursday, I'm like, oh, mid-70s, 80s, I'm going to take the kids and play golf on Saturday after I do the show. And then as I saw the forecast for the weekend, I was like, oh, great. There's no way I'm going out to play golf. But you are actually taking on the challenge.
I don't get that many days off. Really, I'm going to take advantage of the ones I get. Plus, it's my brother's birthday. So, it was already like pre-planned. We got like 12 guys out here. So it's just like a giant 12-man scramble. So I figured I'd be pretty bad if I skipped. So I am toughing out the weather, and the person I partnered up with here, because we assigned teams as evenly as possible, he bought a golf cart cover. So good news, I'm going to be just fine.
Wow. See, I'm the guy. I'm bad enough at golf to where, okay, if I'm wearing the polo shirt in either shorts or pants, whatever the golf course has for, I'm fine. You put me in a heavy coat, and it's over. I can't move. I'm thinking about it, and it's just, it's not a good look.
Yeah, I'm generally not that good, so I don't worry about it. It's fine.
You don't have to tell us where you are, but if you want to, you can.
I am at Tiffany Green.
There you go. So you're up in the Northland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got my brother lives up that way, plus some of these guys do. So up in the Northland today, playing at Tiffany Green.
I have never played Tiffany Greens, but I've been there a number of times when they used to host the Senior Tour stop there, the Champions Tour. But I got to see Lee Trevino and Bruce Summerhays and some of the bigger names on the Senior Tour. I'm not sure. I don't think Freddie Couples ever came, got to see some big time guys. It was fun.
No, it's a great course. This is the one we've played, I think, 3 years in a row for my brother's birthday thing. So we like coming up here for it. So,
and you think
the weather's less than ideal, but
yeah,
it's a day out on the golf course. I'm not going to complain that much.
And you think of the Senior Tour, you're like, oh, these guys are out here cashing a check. They're really not trying. They're still really damn good.
Yeah, so much better than any of us.
Yes. All right, Cody. Well, I hope you enjoy the round of golf and try to stay a little warm and maybe have a cigar and a beverage, or if that's what.
That'll be the plan.
Okay.
Both of those will be the plan. Yep.
And you'll regret having that cigar for the next week and a half.
That's exactly how it goes.
Well, obviously, you're celebrating your brother's birthday today, but we're not celebrating much about the Royal start to the season, especially the bullpen. And believe me, Cody, I laughed out loud last night. I had the Royals game on the TV, and I had your show on the radio, the Sports Night show. And as soon as Ohtani scored the go-ahead run for the Angels, I think Josh might have been on with you at the time. I can't remember who was on, but you said, hey, baseball tonight doesn't officially start till the game is over, but I'm assuming you're flipping off the game, so come over here and give us a call. I mean, we're now to the point where we've conceded that if our bullpen gets in any sort of trouble, which they have every time, that the Royals cannot win right now.
No, and that's it. Like, they don't have any wiggle room. Their offense is so bad right now, they don't have any wiggle room. they let up, you know, and it was Keller last night. He let up that one in the sixth, and you're like, like, really felt like they needed those two runs because the Angels' offense is pretty good.
Right.
And although Grimm had been good in every outing up to the last two, it's still like, well, I don't know. And, yeah, like, the second they went down, like, even it was, like, that Ohtani one was two nights ago, and that was, like, it made it 3-1. I'm like, well, this game's over, so phones are open. And then Ohtani, yeah, I think it was, like, you know, come on. Let's. I mean, the way they're scoring right now, and look at the lineup. Like, they've got problems. They got Ryan Goins in there hitting six some nights. Orlando was hitting six last night. And those guys have nights. They come up. They get some hits. But last night, Abraham Almonte led off of the team, Brad.
I know.
And went 0 for 5 with a strikeout and two ground into double plays, both with one with multiple guys on with nobody out and the other one with the leadoff guy on with nobody out. And you're like, it was just – it's a lineup full of actual rally killers. Like, there's just too many – there's too much dead weight. Too many guys make a mistake. To ask all of those guys to be on in the same night is asking too much. And then on top of it, they're still trying to figure out the bullpen. So sending Mauer down will help. I haven't given up on Grimm. Grimm is not like Mauer. Don't bury the guy yet. Grimm's got some good stuff. But last night was a bad outing for him, obviously letting up three straight singles. The pitch to Ohtani was bad. But the other two were. The third one specifically to Valbuena was hung. So that didn't help anything. But you go back and try to figure out what this team is right now. It's good starting pitching and not good anything else.
That's what I was saying, is this is kind of proving the point that the Royals have proved over the last 4 years, that the bullpen is almost more important than the rotation, because if you can't hold those six outs between the sixth inning and the ninth to get to your closer, you're not going to win. And the Royals have – their rotation is pitching as well as it has over the last 4 years or 5 years at all, and the bullpen makes it irrelevant.
Well, yes, absolutely. And what they might need to do is embrace the sabermetrics even more. They've been playing more shifts than ever before, right? Their analytics department, they've been playing a little bit different. What the analytics would tell you to do is, in that game last night, when you're getting ready to face, like three straight hitters, one of which is Ohtani and Valbuena is a good hitter, like, maybe that's when you bring in Herrera and just make sure it stays 4-2, right?
His contract is set. It's not like if he gets more saves, he's going to be worth that much more to you. His contract is set. Go out and win the game.
Yes, and I know some closers are like, well, I want to close. But those numbers have changed too. Look at reliever numbers. You don't have to be a closer anymore to get rich. Like, that's not – baseball doesn't treat it that way anymore. So save numbers don't matter like they used to. So, like, save guys used to get mad when you did that to them because then they didn't get saved, and then they wouldn't get the contract whatever anymore. I mean, I've seen the reliever contracts. The Colorado Rockies spend more on their bullpen than their starting rotation. So, no, you can get paid and be a reliever, and Herrera can do fine. Just for the purposes of that game, doesn't that be every day? But if those are the best three guys, or that's the worst part of the lineup that you're trying to get through, if it gets two on, nobody out, just get Herrera rocking so that you can try to shut this thing down. I mean, every game has to be, like, the 0-1 game, I was bothered by Ned's explanation of putting in Boyer, because he said, well, you know, like, we're down in that game, and I was going to go to these guys if we were winning. And you're like, you're down 0-1, you're 3-8. Now you're up 4-2, you're now 3-9. You've got to try to bury a game, however. So if that meant pitching Herrera, then that would have been nice. But Hill did a good job. Keller let up the one run and survived it a little bit. But, yeah, the rest of it just it's been a mess.
You know, you talked about, guys aren't focused on saves anymore because they're still getting the big contracts. Primary example is Andrew Miller in Cleveland. He doesn't close anymore. He makes a ton of money.
They all do.
Yeah.
Like, again, the Rockies have, like, three guys that they spend, like, $50 million on in the bullpen. They don't all close. Like, they can't all close. I guess they can, given the night, but they don't all close. Like, it's fine. Like, relievers have changed. You got to use them in a different fashion. And even, you know, and maybe plays a hot hand sometimes a little bit. Like, Hill gets lefties and righties out pretty effectively. He burned through the two guys. Like, let him roll back out there. It's fine. He got through his two batters. Send him back out there if he's the guy who's getting outs that night. Just, I'd like him to try a little bit different approach, but Ned's had a very certain way he does it, and right now he doesn't have the bullpen to execute it.
We're talking with Cody Tapp here on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Cody had the Baseball Tonight show last night. They got to talk about another collapse by Kansas City. You know, Cody, I was thinking about this too during the game. I joked earlier in the week that I know John Jay plays left field mostly and center field a little bit, But if I just look onto the field and I want to locate him quickly, I'm going to look at first base because he's always standing there. And he didn't start last night, but he got a pinch hit late. And, of course, he got a single, and there he is on first base again. And there have been a couple of players over the years that when they're not in the lineup, you think, oh, boy, how are we going to construct this thing without this guy? He needs an off day. What do we do? John Jay is older. He's not going to play every day. But when the lineup came out last night and John Jay's not in there, I was like, oh, boy. John Jay's become the oh, boy guy that we have to have in the leadoff spot.
Here's the good news with all that, Brad. If your team tank and get assets,
yes,
all the guys you want to trade are actually performing good.
Him and Lucas Duda are hitting.
If you wanted to trade Duda, great, he's performing. If you wanted to trade Jay, great, he's performing. If you wanted to trade Kennedy or Hamill or Herrera or Moustakas, the guys you actually want to perform to trade are doing exactly that. The scarier part, the flip side of that coin, is that the guys that you're hoping are somehow still on this team when it comes to you want to be competitive teams again? Well, that's not looking as good, right?
Right.
Slayer and Cuthbert and Witt's been fine. But, like, all the guys that you would potentially think, well, we want these guys to be a part of the team in 5 years when we're good again, that's been a little bit rocky. But if your team tank and sell, it's not that bad right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going the way you want it to. I still think they'll be significantly better offensively. They're scoring like 2.7 runs a game. That's about what they scored in April last year when they finished 7-19, and then the offense got a lot better, and pitching kept up enough serve to get them back into .500 middle of the year, right, and only finishing two games below .500. So I think this team is closer to that one than they are right now, which is pacing for 40 wins.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, when Jays have a lineup right now, they're just missing too much. At least Perez is supposed to go on a rehab assignment possibly as early as this weekend, so that helps.
That'll be a positive sign to get him back. I was thinking about this at the end of the game, Cody, before you came on with baseball tonight. When Whit Merrifield took off for second base in the bottom of the ninth with Moustakas at the plate and two outs, my initial thought was, oh no. And not because I thought he was going to get tagged out. I thought this is a huge mistake in terms of strategy. Because I watched games for years with Al Fitzmaurice when we used to work together. And
sure.
He would always tell me, you know, God, don't take the bat out of somebody's hands for crying out loud. Willie Wilson, the greatest base dealer in Royals history, he would tell me, look, I'll give you a couple of pitches to get your look before I take off. But you got to tell me. You got to tell me when to take off. And as soon as Whit Merrifield took off, I was like, oh, no. And I don't know if that's something that maybe isn't taught anymore or it was just an honest mistake. I heard his quote saying, I'm aggressive, and maybe I made a mistake there. Maybe it was a mistake, but he took the bat. Even if he's safe, he takes the bat out of Moustakas' hands because then they're not going to throw him a strike.
Which is a problem because he's a power hitter. But now you're still in the firm part of the middle part of the lineup, so you feel okay about it. But he admitted the same thing you just did. So if there's anything, Brad, feel better. He learned his lesson. Did you hear what he said? He said, next time probably what I should do is give Moustakas a couple of pitches. Then
right.
If he gets down in the count, then I can go. Because then, even if you do steal it, and he's down 1-2 still because, the third he's down 0-2 and the third one's a ball, they're not likely to, walk him at that point because they're he's still down in the count. They might still throw to him, right? So you've still done your job. But that's the lesson Whit will learn. He led the American League in stolen bases last year, so I'd hate to be like, hey, man, you can't steal there. But he's got to learn to give him a couple of shots to put one in the fountain first.
All right, we're talking with Cody Tapp, talking Royals baseball. The Royals will go back at it again tonight at 6:15, Game 3 of the four-game series with the Angels. And this game will be broadcast for television purposes. We'll be on Fox Sports 1, which is the national broadcast, instead of Fox Sports Midwest. Garrett Richards, who I've liked over the years, against Jacob Junis. And I was joking earlier with Jed and Rudy. I said, after last night, I'm firmly convinced this is set up for a sweep. And then I was reminded Jacob Junis pitches tonight with his two wins and 0.00 ERA. I don't think you can have a better ERA, but that gives me a little bit of hope that they can salvage a game because then you got Ohtani coming on Sunday, and so far he has shown no penchant for slipping back, and it is the Royals lineup.
And it's supposed to be cold, so
yes,
that
again.
The good news about Junis is that the Royals have won 8 of the games following a loss out of the 10 attempts. He's followed them 10 times in a loss. They've won 8 of them. So he's the definition of a stopper, so at least right now the way he's pitching. So I guess the hope for the Royals tonight is that Junis continues that and continues to be the stopper for the Orioles, because they need a bat. They got to get a couple back on the black and not let the thing get to 8 or 9 below 500 this early on.
Yeah, and I was looking at Junis's numbers, and not only the 0.00 ERA, which makes me think of Animal House. D-Day,
sure.
your GPA is 0.00, and you have no GPA. But some of the other numbers that I really like are WHIP, walks and hits for innings pitched, and that's at 0.50.
Yep.
And batting average against is 0.089. 9 strikeouts to 3 walks. I mean, pick out the set of numbers you want to base your evaluation on. Right now, they're all fantastic.
Yeah, he has looked phenomenal. That fastball moves a lot, and then the slider's been devastating. And the curve and the changeup's gotten better. He's just right now everything's clicking. I'm really looking forward to seeing him today, because the Angels present a real challenge. That is a tough lineup. No, you know, and it'll be chilly, but it won't be cold like what they were playing in Cleveland cold. And that's a real lineup top to bottom. Like when Ohtani's hitting 7th or 8th, you
right.
got to get through some guys.
And that's so going to change, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, this will be the first real test of this year for Junis, but I'm hoping he can continue, again, the stopper stuff. But, yeah, if you look at his pitches, obviously, he's really good. He didn't even have his best stuff, and he threw 7 shutout innings the other night. He admitted he didn't have his best stuff, and you could tell, because he walked 3 guys and hit 2 more and still got through 7 shutout innings. That's pretty good.
All right, we're talking with Cody Tapp. Final thing for you, Cody. I know you got to hit the links up there to help celebrate your brother's birthday. Speaking of good numbers, we're going to see Ohtani on Sunday. He won't play today. Because he doesn't play a DH or in the field the day before a start or the day after a start. Now we're just talking about day after a start, day before a start, DHing it like it's a common thing now because guy's established it. But, you know, his numbers are just as good. His ERA is 2.08, WHIP of 0.46, 18 strikeouts to 2 walks with an opponent's batting average of 0.093. And as you mentioned, it's going to be a cold day. And as much as I like to see the Royals win, I really am looking forward to seeing Ohtani in his show tomorrow.
So am I. His split is so good.
It's ridiculous.
And much like how he runs or swings, he effortlessly throws 99 miles an hour.
Right.
Which is no big deal. Just have a devastating, split or fork or whatever they want to call it, and then couple that with a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. Yes, of course. Someone gave me a hard time. I'm like, why are you excited to see this guy? When I was talking about it before they got in town, I'm like, what do you mean? When was the last time you remember seeing a guy hit home runs and shut out guys pitching? Yes, well, I'm interested. Yes, I'd like to see him play.
And one of my kids was asking me last night, well, pitchers can still hit in the American League, right? And I said, yeah, you don't have to use the DH. It's an option. Well, do you think they'll let him do that? And I said, absolutely not. Absolutely
not.
Absolutely not.
I think if he keeps if he keeps hitting like this, they'll find a way to get him in more. But
yeah.
For now, just play careful because it's working.
All right, Cody. Hope your drives are straight and 300 yards, and you and your brother and your crew have fun up at Tiffany Springs today. And stay warm and shoot low.
I appreciate it, Brad. Thanks.
All right, that is Cody Tapp joining us to talk a little baseball, Royals baseball. He was on the show last night, baseball tonight as well as sports night. I heard him the other day listing off. There was a day he did like 5 straight hours on the air between the different shows, sports night, baseball tonight, pregame, more sports night, baseball tonight, postgame. So he's got a lot of work. He's got a job. Oh, and he teaches at Avila. He's a professor. Teaches broadcasting. He's a raconteur, Cody Tapp is. So we call him a raconteur. Look that up because I don't know how to spell it, or I could look it up. All right, we still have a lot to go on the show. Coming up at 10:25, Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star is going to join us. We'll talk all things KU sports related, primarily the FBI probe into college basketball and the payment of student athletes, payments to parents. And KU has been brought into this, not directly, but indirectly, at least as of right now. So we'll talk to Jesse Newell about that. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll be wide open, so we can kick around any number of things. We can hit a little more Royals, a little more Chiefs draft, KU if you want, or NBA playoffs, which we'll have this afternoon at 1:30 here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. But right now, we will take a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. We're broadcasting live from the Rally House Studios. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Get down on it. Get down on it. Weather's not going to get us down. We're going to get down on it. Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. I'm your host, Brad Porter. Rudy Salazar is running the controls. Jed Marshall is here as well. He's going to jump in off and on. And right now, we're going to switch it to college basketball, and specifically the University of Kansas. And for that, we bring in our friend Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Jesse, I was joking last week that I have self-diagnosed myself with seasonal affect disorder. When I wake up and it's cloudy and cold every Saturday and Sunday, it gets me down. But that's why I'm playing this music. We're trying to bring everybody up here. It's got to stop at some point.
Right? I guess the only positive I can say is that, you know, social media sometimes brings us together and also
yes.
lets us know that it could be worse. So I saw some friends in Minnesota had their whole yard covered in snow. So I guess we don't have to deal with that.
No, we're not. And it is April 14th, too. All right. On a more serious note, Jesse Newell, follow him on Twitter at Jesse Newell and go to KansasCity.com to find all his good stuff about Kansas athletics. The big news came out this week, obviously. The FBI continues its investigation into college basketball and whether or not there were illegal payments made to players or their families. And the University of Kansas, KU, has been drawn into this now because the FBI has said that James Gatto, who's an executive with Adidas, paid a mother and guardian of two unnamed KU student-athletes who are said to have benefited from illegal payments which were made without knowledge of the university. Now, your story in the Kansas City Star, which you wrote in conjunction with Blair Kirkhoff, says the players are believed to be Billy Preston, who never played a game for the Jayhawks, and Silvio De Souza, who appeared in 20 games this season as a freshman. I know what the backstory is, but I'm assuming that just on the surface, it's the dates of the payments match up with those two players?
Yeah, that's basically, you know, they're not going to come out and say those names, but like in the case of De Souza, when they're speaking about when he first committed to Kansas, and then when he signed with Kansas, those dates match up exactly with what's in the indictment, as long with the indictment saying that it was a surprise announcement. And you can look back, and we actually have it linked in there to the Baltimore Sun. There's an article saying how Silvio De Souza was a surprise announcement to Kansas when it was assumed he was going to go to Maryland. So, again, we don't know that for sure, but you put the pieces together, and it kind of leads you to a conclusion.
And the FBI has also said, and this has brought out some, this has been brought in for some criticism. The FBI said that the University of Kansas is a victim in this. How has the FBI played it? Is it simply because there's no evidence that anybody associated with the Kansas Jayhawks was aware of these payments? Is it as simple as that?
Well, basically what it is it's, you have to sort of make mental gymnastics to have the FBI be involved in this at all. You know, there has to
right.
be a victim for to use up taxpayer money to try to see what's going on in this and try to, you know, get people guilty of crimes, that sort of thing. And so for that to happen, you have to have a victim. And, you know, the phrase, I guess, that they use in there is that the schools are the victims because Adidas is working, or Adidas officials are working to give these players money, and these schools are giving these players scholarships, but they're actually pursuing what are ineligible players, in essence, you know, if they're receiving payments from Jim Gatto. So when you, excuse me, when you hear KU is a victim in this, that's basically the FBI getting a workaround to say, we can work on this case, we can use taxpayer dollars to do this because there's somebody being harmed here. But again, a lot of people are not sure that that's going to hold up toward, you know, toward the end when you have to go through the whole process of it. Like, okay, is Kansas really a victim in this? Are they really, you know, not benefiting from what has happened in this whole scheme to begin with? And so basically that's just kind of semantics, if you will. It's sort of the wording that has to happen so that the FBI can pursue this. And so that's what kind of gets twisted around. And I know KU has fallen back on it a little bit. You know, there was a KU release, and Bill Self is kind of talked about it as well, that so far in this case, KU has been nothing but listed as a victim in there. And while that is, you know, basically repeating the words of what the indictment says and totally true, I do understand people coming out there and saying, you know, what does that mean? Why is Kansas a victim when they've signed up, you know, with Adidas for a long-term contract and
have been with the A's for a long time, and it certainly seemed to at least be benefiting from getting these kids in school and going to school at these schools, even if they had no knowledge of it. So that wording is kind of tricky because it's something that KU really can't fall back on, but it is the official wording of the indictment from the FBI, and there are reasons for that, even if those reasons seem kind of, you know, strange. And the reason for it is basically so they can pursue this case as they want to pursue it.
All right, you're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHBI. I'm Brad Porter. We're talking with Jesse Newell, the Kansas City Star, about the FBI investigation into college basketball and illegal payments from shoe companies to either student-athletes or the parents or guardians or relatives of student-athletes. You mentioned Bill Self has had to put out a couple of releases on this, and I know most of us have read the Pat Forty stories this week, and some other national writers have published stories where they've quoted unnamed either former coaches or current coaches saying that Kansas has to know about this and because everybody else does, and basically implied that Bill Self knows exactly what's going on here, or his assistants do, and they've looked the other way. I'm not comfortable going that far without any evidence, but these writers have gotten other coaches to say that. It would be better if those coaches were on the record, but they're not going to do that. But it certainly is not a good look when other coaches or former coaches are saying this.
Yeah, it's really difficult in these sort of cases because you're trying to sort out, you know, who is talking about this and who would talk about this. And, you know, while there very well could be a Kansas problem, I think it's pretty evident right now that this is not just a Kansas problem.
Right.
So I know they were named or their players were named in the indictment as receiving money, but I mean, there's a committee in college basketball that's going to release its findings here come up later in April to basically talk about that this is, you know, rampant across the sport. And so, you know, it is hard to not maybe laser focus in on Kansas because they have been named in this and they are an Adidas school and the FBI obviously is pursuing Adidas schools. But, you know, at the same time, if you read the part that, you know, appears to be DeSosa in the indictment about how, you know, some of that money from Adidas was going to go back to pay back another rival shoe company who he was going to commit to, and that would be Under Armour. So, you know, I'm not sure anybody's really clean in this, but, you know, to your point, for Kansas, there are going to be stories written. There is going to be, you know, a magnifying glass put on the program. And if you're asking me kind of how this goes or how it works, I don't think there's any coach out there, whether they're being quoted with their names or not, that doesn't think that this – that thinks that this does not happen in college basketball. You know, I mean, that doesn't think that this happens at Kansas or Kentucky or, I mean, just name your school. I mean, it's college basketball. These players and this sort of scheme has been going on for a while, as we've seen from some previous cases. But, you know, it gets kind of it's kind of interesting when other people are throwing stones because you wonder, okay, is that from a program that's doing things completely clean itself? You know, I mean, just because – And I appreciate your point, Brad, because it's this. Here's what KU has. KU has an ability to say, look, here's the indictment. In the indictment, there were some other schools in there that had coaches or coaching staffs listed as knowing that these things took place.
Right.
In the indictment for Kansas, none of that was.
Not, yes, exactly. No names.
Not
no.
yet. So exactly what you're talking about is plausible deniability.
Yes, it's
for Kansas.
It's something
there is
every
no evidence out there that the coaching staff knew, at least from these FBI indictments, at least so far. And so, as long as that's the case, Kansas can always fall back on that and say, "Look, there is nothing out there that is saying that Kansas was connected to these payments." Now, again, it all depends on your perspective. I understand that there are K-State or Missouri fans out there saying, how in the world did they not know these payments were going on? And I understand that because, again, I think all these coaches know these payments are going on. But the plausible deniability of that is that none of that has been connected as of yet to KU's coaching staff or KU's coaching staff having knowledge of it. And that's really where things would get dicey for Kansas. Now, I think where Pat Forty's article took it to a different level is he went back and looked at all these issues that KU has had. And all of a sudden, you know, when you're looking at the Cliff Alexanders and some of these other issues and you put them together, do you all of a sudden say that KU has a problem of compliance and looking the other way too much or not doing its due diligence? And when Blair and I wrote about this, you know, it's a little bit back like the USC case. Now, they're not completely similar, but again, with Reggie Bush, he received money from an agent for his stepfather. They got a car, they got a house, all these sorts of things. USC was not involved in that, but basically the NCAA found that, you know, they did not have, there was a lack of institutional control, basically. They were not doing their due diligence to make sure that this was not going on. And so if you want to go down that road, I guess you can. But again, we also have to zoom out a little bit and realize that Kansas is not the only team right now that is in this FBI investigation. And if the NCAA wants to start cleaning up all these messes that they have, KU's a part of a list right now. You know what I mean? There's Arizona, there's NC State, there's Miami, there's Maryland. I mean, like, there's all these schools that have been involved with it. And so this is not just a KU thing, and you can't just laser focus on KU, because there's a lot of problems if the NCAA wants to pursue this and try to go back and slap the hands of all the people that might have done wrong earlier. I mean, if you start giving punishment that's a little bit worse to one school and not the other, you can have some charges of favoritism. Plus, I mean, we mentioned this in the story, but even if you continue to go down the line, the NCAA tries to go back and vacate all these victories and championships and punish all these teams that might have had wrongdoing, they're going to keep the story in the news cycle for a whole other year. And why would you want to do that? I mean, you want to move forward if you're NCAA. You don't want to move backwards and keep this thing in the limelight. So, again, there's lots of problems, and that's kind of why it's difficult at this point to write a lot about it, is because we don't know how long this FBI investigation is going on. We don't know if this is going to be another 12-month process, 18-month process, 24-month process. And we don't know how the NCAA is going to pursue people in the past, but they want to try to vacate victories and things like that. We don't know if they can investigate themselves. We don't know if they can use what the FBI has. We don't know if that's good enough evidence for them. I mean, can they just use the indictment that's out there and say, hey, you know, Sylvia DeSosa took money? I mean, that seems pretty flimsy if you're looking at it just from an evidence standpoint, since the NCAA did not grab that info itself. So there's a lot of questions out there, and it's really difficult this time because everybody wants answers. Everybody wants to know how it's going to turn out. And at this point, it's just a little bit too soon. It's a little bit too soon to know how this is going to affect Kansas, how this is going to affect some of these other schools, how it's going to affect the NCAA, and how it's going to affect college basketball as a whole, just because, as we know, this FBI investigation, it's not done, not yet.
You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHBI. I'm Brad Porter. We're talking with Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. One point I wanted to hit on, something you brought up, is plausible deniability, where you may have an inkling that something is going on, but you don't have a phone record or a text message or an email that implicates that you knew what was going on. Look, I'm old enough, Jesse, that I covered the Myron Piggy stuff back in the late 90s here in Kansas City when he was working with Nike as kind of a runner, and he was running around town distributing Nike shoes, and he was getting paid a significant amount of money from Nike, and he went to prison. And he would not flip on anybody at Nike or any high school coaches or college coaches that he knew might be involved. This has been going on for maybe even before that, but I covered Myron Piggy when he was here, when that trial was going on in Kansas City. So plausible deniability exists, but to say that coaches have an idea that something is going on, I'll buy that 100%.
Well, yeah. Well,
I mean, it's been going on too long, and there's no...
If I'm going to draw another example, okay, so... And, again, this one was kind of pulled back a little bit because Sean Miller is still the coach at Arizona. But if you think about that case, you know, when that first came out and there was a media report that he was on the phone.
He's on tape, yeah, and then he wasn't.
About getting paid. The shock in that, if you listen to, like, College Game Day and you listen to Jay Billis talk about it, the shock in that wasn't that DeAndre Ayton could get paid by somebody or get paid by Adidas or a shoe company or whatever. The shock in that was that Sean Miller would be on the phone during that conversation. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because even if you know what's happening, and even if you turn a blind eye toward it, you're smart enough as a head coach to know that you'll never be a part of that conversation. And again, if we're putting these pieces together, and listen, I have no firsthand knowledge of anything like this happening, but you could see something happening where if someone is going to do dirty work for a college basketball program, it's going to be someone far removed from the head coach. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So that person is insulated, and there is never any evidence brought across from them that they were involved in these payments. And as you said, Brad, you know, in these sort of schemes, you get somebody where, in the Myron Piggy case, I think it's a really good example that if there is some mistake made and someone is found to have been a part of this or have had knowledge of it, that that person can just basically say, yep, it was me, nobody else knew about it, fall on the sword, and then that's that. You know what I mean? Kind of like Myron did.
And that's what Myron did. So, I'm not talking to anybody about anything.
Exactly. And so that's where you stand with this thing. And so that's what I'm talking about, too, when you're talking about the NCAA going back and maybe penalizing teams. The evidence has to be there. You know what
right.
I mean? And so many times the NCAA, when they have punished teams in the past, what they take advantage of is the school gets wind, whatever it is, a media report or an investigation that there might be trouble. The school investigates itself, and then the school sends its findings and its investigation to the NCAA and says, hey, here's what we found, here's what we've suggested the punishment be, and then the NCAA sort of piggybacks off that. Okay, we accept that, and we give you this, or whatever. It's a little different here. I mean, again, you've kind of read some media reports about how KU is not going to do its own investigation, but it kind of makes sense. Like, I don't see the need or the motivation for a lot of these schools to go and investigate themselves and do the NCAA's work for them so they can turn themselves in the NCAA when the NCAA doesn't really have this evidence, you know?
Right.
And it's not even clear right now that the FBI will turn over what it has to the NCAA. And so, you know, for the NCAA to go back and penalize these teams, they need the evidence, and they need good evidence, and they need it to be clear, and they need it to be able to hold up, you know, in courts of law, that sort of thing. And that is kind of an unclear measure right here. So, again, there can be assumptions out there. There can be, you know, coaches that are saying quotes and stories that are saying, oh, well, Kansas knew or whatever the case may be. And that's all fine. I mean, that's all probably stuff that happens. But the bottom line is, for anything to happen here, there's got to be evidence.
Right.
And there's got to be linking towards this stuff. And if not, then they've got to find a different way to do it, which is like we were talking about with USC. You've basically got to say, hey, we find that KU's compliance department did not do its job. And so those are kind of the loopholes around it to try to punish a team in this instance. But like I said, the grand scheme or the grand end of this whole thing is the NCAA going to pursue all these schools that have been brought up in the FBI scandal? Or is the NCAA going to say, look, for self-preservation, we've got to try to get this fixed moving forward instead of punishing everybody moving backward. And so, again, we'll see more what that committee comes out with Connelly's Rice and the suggestions they make. But the NCAA is in a tough spot right now, too. I mean, this thing could dissolve very quickly if this thing gets out of control. And so they'll be trying to serve their self-interest as much as they will be trying to maybe look back and try to punish teams as well. So, again, it'll be fascinating to see what happens moving forward, but it's just too early to know right now kind of what path that's going to be moving down the line.
All right, we're talking with Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Final thing for you, Jesse, and you can wrap this up in about a minute if you want to. This is just me thinking outside and thinking to myself, but I'll pose it to you. Adidas is paying these schools millions of dollars a year to wear their gear. They're providing the schools with hundreds of thousands, if not a couple of million dollars worth of gear for every sport, football, basketball, softball, baseball, wrestling, swimming, you name it. They provide all this stuff to the schools. Then they're paying athletes who are not eligible to be paid. They're paying professionals millions and millions of dollars in basketball and soccer, which is huge. I've got to see the books to understand where the payoff is in all that. Because the capital outlay just to get schools to wear their gear and pay them to do it is mind-boggling to me. How much money they must be making to say it's worth it.
Yeah, well, and you know, if you're looking at this from just the player standpoint, it obviously does make sense because
absolutely it does.
Know, yeah, these agents pay a little bit of money early on. They try to get in with these kids early, and then when they sign pro contracts, then they get them to their shoe company and their brand. And again, you could see this as a no-victim situation. I mean, that's kind of why, again, when we're talking to the FBI and they're saying Kansas is a victim, if you're looking at this from a grand scheme, okay, the NCAA has this amateurism model. You can't pay the athletes. Those athletes are worth much more money than the university can provide them.
Right.
And so it's a free market. And so basically these agents are paying the kids, which helps out the families. And then down the line, maybe they sign with their companies, which, I mean, is working out for the company. So it's kind of like, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And everybody sort of benefits with this until the FBI comes in. Everybody says, oh, that's a federal crime. Well, nobody really thought about that before. You know, everybody just thought it was kind of an unspoken system that went on. But, you know, as far as the schools go, I think, you know, for KU's Adidas contract, it depends on the certain one, but if you look down the line of the top ones out there, like in the Big 12, it's Kansas. I'm sorry, it's Texas with Nike and then Kansas, and then like the rest of the Big 12. Like KU's getting paid, I think, almost double when it comes to that contract compared to others. And I think where Adidas fits into this is that Nike can be a little bit choosy with who they pay. You know, Texas, you're going to pay a little bit more. But I think Adidas was sort of trying to make a run, you know, at Nike and kind of trying to build up their brand as well. And so that's why you see them kind of making these blockbuster deals with certain schools out there like Kansas. But, again, for KU, that's a lot of money to turn away from. And if you do turn away from it, then all of a sudden you're giving other people like Nike a lot of leverage against you if you're trying to rip up a contract and make a new one. So it's a complicated matter. We'll see what happens with Kansas. But, again, that victim talk is kind of what people are going to be linked to right now, just because of it doesn't make much sense to us to say that KU was the victim in this. But, again, that's how the FBI has to phrase it if they want to pursue this case and continue pursuing it. And we'll see if that holds up here over the next year or two in courts and all that, those sorts of things. But that word is going to be thrown around a lot. You can guarantee that.
And hopefully the FBI comes up with something, because the FBI being involved with basketball shoe companies seems a little strange to me. But there must be something else. Hey, Jesse Newell, I appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning. Please enjoy the rest of your day and try to stay warm and maybe take in some NBA playoffs. We'll see a couple of KU kids out there today.
Huh? I'm going to stay inside. That's my only plan.
Absolutely.
So I appreciate it, Brad.
Hey, Jesse, thank you very much. That is Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Follow him on Twitter at Jesse Newell, or go to the website, kansascity.com. He and Blair Kirkhoff did a pretty comprehensive story this week on the FBI investigation into shoe companies that is now drawn in the University of Kansas. All right, we will take a quick timeout. Jed Marshall is going to jump back in here with us. And then the 11 o'clock hour is wide, wide open. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. We're broadcasting live from the Rally House Studios. We'll be back right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The reason I asked for this song for today, by the way, this is Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, broadcasting live from the Rally House Studios. Jed Marshall's back in the studio. Rudy Marshall's running the show. I really love this song. I don't think there's anybody who doesn't like this song. But yesterday, one of the topics that blew up on Twitter, there were three or four, but apparently Taylor Swift is releasing her version of September. And look, it's not good. It's not my thing. I don't like it. But, you know, there was a lot of flash. You're awful. You should never do that. And so other people have covered it before and done okay. And you take it or leave it. Doesn't bother me. But the reason I wanted to play that song is it's another that got me on the path of thinking about feel-good songs. That's just a really great, great song from Earth, Wind, and Fire. So there you go. Bring it up a little bit. Jed Marshall is back in here, and we just wrapped up with Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star talking about the FBI investigation into shoe companies and illegal payments to either student athletes or their parents or their legal guardians. A lot of pieces there. And one of the questions I had down that I didn't get a chance to ask, but we can kick it around here. What's in this for the FBI? Is this simply the big name shoe companies and big name universities, we're going after it and we're going to get big headlines out of this? Is there a seedier underbelly that we don't know about? Is there something deeper? Is this because maybe the IRS wants to keep a rein on all this money and make sure they get their cut? I'm not sure what the motive is here. This isn't, you know, these aren't drug kingpins. These are not, you know, mob associates. I don't know where this goes, and maybe they don't know where it goes. I just wonder why the shoe companies popped up on the radar as a top priority.
I don't understand what the end game is either. The only thing that I've ever thought all along is tax evasion is where they'll really be able to, I guess, put people away. And maybe in light of everything that's gone on with Larry Nassar and even going back to Joe Paterno, we're encompassing a lot of different things there. But college athletics have gotten really out of hand in a lot of different regards. So maybe they're trying to check it in that way. I don't know how that relates to shoe companies, though.
I don't either. And the NCAA, I don't know what they're going to. They're going to have this special group come
task
out. Task force come out, I believe, on April 25th with their findings and suggestions for cleaning up college athletics. The NCAA is not big enough. Their staff is not big enough. They don't have enough. I don't even know. I don't think they have investigators. They got to have somebody who finds the information. They're not big enough to handle all these schools and all these charges and all these stories and whatever it turns out. They got to follow it and they find something and follow it and they don't find something. They find that North Carolina had a fake class, but it wasn't specifically for athletes. It was for everybody. So that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. I just wonder if the schools, especially the Power Five schools, don't need to get together and discuss a way to either rebuild the NCAA from scratch or blow it up altogether and start with something else, because this isn't working.
Agreed. To me, the biggest absurdity of what the NCAA could perpetuate upon any program, the taking down of banners.
That's ridiculous.
I understand losing postseason eligibility. That actually hurts you. The loss of scholarships, those actually hurt you.
Right.
But if someone told me tomorrow, Kansas banner, 08, coming down, okay.
You wouldn't care.
Well, technically, Kansas beat no one for that national championship.
That's right, because
Memphis
had to vacate.
Yeah, they didn't play. There's no 2013 champion, I guess, currently, because Louisville took down a stupid banner. The point is, if you know enough about college basketball or college football or college athletics, mm-hmm. if whatever regard, you can run down the champions,
right.
whether they're vacated or not. It doesn't matter, my point.
The NCAA is trying to pull off the Obi-Wan Kenobi trick. These are not the droids you're looking for. These are not the championships that were actually won and no longer. We're going to erase them from your memory.
It's way over my head. I'm not a Star Wars guy.
I'll say, I think this does point, though, the fact that we kind of give the NCAA crap on some of their punishments, but I think we forget, like, they don't have that much power.
Right.
No.
There's not a lot they can really do.
Right.
So, like, that's why you end up wins getting vacated, because that's about all they really have.
Well, and people,
we're going to take out our eraser.
Yeah, when they go pro, the NCAA literally has no authority or jurisdiction against them, so what are they going to do?
All right, we will take a quick timeout, an open hour next hour. We're going to kick around several topics. You're listening to Sports Saturday. I'm Brad Porter. We're broadcasting live from the Rally House Studios on Sports Radio 810 WHB.